Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, March 1st. Governor Cuomo is not denying the account of a second employee who came forward this weekend and said he sexually harassed her in his office. 25-year-old Charlotte Bennett was quoted telling the New York Times that the governor asked her about her sex life, including if she had slept with older men, and that Cuomo, who is 63, said he would consider a relationship with a woman in her 20s. Again, Ms. Bennett is 25. This allegedly happened just last year, June 5th. Of 2020, she says. You'll remember that last Wednesday, Lindsay Boylan, age 36, Cuomo's former Deputy Secretary of Economic Development, released a statement alleging what she called repeated sexual harassment, including the sentence, "Let's play strip poker," during an airplane flight on a business trip in 2017, and that he shocked her by kissing her on the lips at the end of a business meeting in his office in 2018. The governor yesterday released a statement. So this is his first real statement on this, and it's not a denial, and it includes an apology. It's short, so I'll read the whole thing. "Questions have been raised," the governor writes, "about some of my past interactions with people in the office. I never intended to offend anyone or cause any harm. I spend most of my life at work, and colleagues are often also personal friends." He says, "At work, sometimes I think I'm being playful and make jokes that I think are funny. I do on occasion tease people in what I think is a good-natured way. I do it in public and in private. You have seen me do it at briefings hundreds of times. I have teased people about their personal lives, their relationships, about getting married or not getting married. I mean no offense and only attempt to add some levity and banter to what is very serious business." The governor goes on to an admission. "I now understand that my interactions may have been insensitive or too personal, and that some of my comments, given my position, made others feel in ways I never intended. I acknowledge some of the things I have said have been misinterpreted as an unwanted flirtation. To the extent anyone felt that way, I am truly sorry about that." And he goes on, "To be clear, I never inappropriately touched anybody, and I never propositioned anybody, and I never intended to make anyone feel uncomfortable, but these are allegations that New Yorkers deserve answers to. That's why I've asked for an outside independent review that looks at these allegations. Separately, my office has heard anecdotally that some people have reached out to Ms. Bennett to express displeasure about her coming forward. My message to anyone doing that is you have misjudged what matters to me and my administration, and you should stop now, period." So that's the governor's full statement. Now there will be a review after a disagreement over the weekend between the governor and state attorney general about by whom. Let's get more details now from Josefa Velasquez, reporter for the news organization The City. Thanks for coming on, Josefa. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
For people just now catching up with the weekend's developments, can you tell us more about who 25-year-old Charlotte, did I say Jessica? It's Charlotte Bennett. If I use the wrong first name, that's somebody else. Charlotte Bennett, what job she had in the governor's office and what she said happened?
Sure. So Charlotte Bennett says that she was an executive assistant for the governor, basically briefing him on matters throughout the day. And then after she reported the governor's inappropriate comments to her, she was moved to another portion of the building at the state capitol and became a health policy advisor until she left in November. And what Charlotte has described to the New York Times is a series of inappropriate comments made by the governor. I don't think she has said that the governor has inappropriately touched her or forced himself on her, but she has said that there's been an unsettling series of questions by the governor himself, including whether she was comfortable having sex with a man who was older than her and repeatedly mentioning that she is a survivor of a sexual assault, things that she said made her clearly uncomfortable.
I read the governor's written statement there. Has he said anything else?
No, that's been about all that we've heard from the governor. Yesterday was, you know, a full day of back and forth between the governor's office and what would be happening with this investigation. So for everyone listening, you know, it was whiplash, really. A lot of back and forth over who exactly would be able to investigate these allegations levied against the governor. At first, he had proposed to have a former judge, Barbara Jones, investigate these allegations. And after a torrent of criticism, because Jones has close ties to a former Cuomo aide, that idea was dropped. And then the governor's office proposed to have Tish James, the attorney general, investigate these claims with the chief judge, Janet DeFiore. That was dropped as well because Janet DeFiore, the chief judge of New York's highest court, is a Cuomo appointee and has extensive ties to him. So ultimately last night, the last that we've heard was the governor's office has given the attorney general the clearance to begin investigating this, and the attorney general will in turn find an outside investigator to start looking into some of these allegations.
And I want to ask you about the attorney general's investigation, even with an outside investigator, and questions around whether that's exactly the right office to lead this. Josefa, there are at least two questions, I guess, about the attorney general's independence on this. One would be that attorney general is frequently a launching pad for governor. Elliot Spitzer ascended from attorney general to governor, then Andrew Cuomo himself ascended from attorney general to governor. If the governor doesn't run for re-election next year or is in a weakened political state, people speculate Letitia James may well run for governor next year, so might have some political conflict of interest in that regard. Secondly, let's take that first one first. What are people saying about her placement as the one who investigates this?
So, although her office has been referred to investigate these claims, she would actually, and the office itself would actually outsource the investigation to another investigator. So it's not like Tish James' office would directly be investigating this. It would be an independent outside entity that would really look into what happened here. So there is this level of removal. But with that being said, you know, a lot of people have been muttering that Tish James is perfectly positioned to take on, you know, a possible gubernatorial run if, in fact, the governor steps aside, resigns, is forced to leave office. And I think the next weeks will be critical in doing that. I think it's too early to tell whether or not he survives this earth-shattering moment. It's really the biggest scandal of his tenure so far, but Tish James has definitely been rumored to be the contender at this point and the one that's on the forefront of being able to become governor. If and so, Andrew Cuomo has been significantly weakened or is no longer governor after this.
And the second question that people have raised is a structural one about the office of attorney general, which is sometimes in the position of defending the governor or the governor's office. Mm-hmm. So if there's some kind of charge against the governor, it's sometimes the attorney general who is required to step in his defense in a legal context. Does that come into play here?
Sure. So the role of the attorney general's office is to be the lawyer for the state. And that means the lawyer for Andrew Cuomo in some respect. I'm not sure how this plays out, to be quite frank. I know that the Attorney General's office is going to have to hire a law firm and deputize them as attorneys within the Attorney General's office to be able to investigate these allegations. They'll have subpoena power. But at the end of the day, I don't know how this works. I think a lot of people are trying to figure that out now and reading through as many laws and talking to as many smart people to find out what happens. Because the last time we've seen something similar to this was Elliot Spitzer, and he ended up resigning. So it's unclear, you know, what steps need to be taken at this point.
Let's take a phone call. Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alan.
Good morning. I have been very concerned about taking the right balance on this. I'm not insensitive to the generic concerns of what a PR, human resources director at a company would think about this kind of behavior, but this is not a private company executive. This is a governor of a state, which happens to be the prime prosecutorial state against a former president. And I believe that some of the media hype around this has probably been accelerated by some of the same tactics that were used in 2016 in social media by forces outside our borders, possibly, can't prove it, to make this a top story when it really doesn't warrant it. It's not much different from the Al Franken story, where things that are now recognized as not warranting his resignation led to it because there was this firestorm and it ran beyond people's ability to think rationally and let it cool in that saucer that they say about the Senate. We need something like that for media as well, to allow these things to cool down before they have a life of their own. And I don't think there's anything there. If you accept everything that was alleged here, nothing here rises to the level of a resignation event, but it could cause that because of the echo chamber effect.
Alan, when you talk about it possibly being driven by Republicans, you're aware, I'm sure I know from your previous phone calls, how you follow New York politics, and I imagine that you're aware that a lot of the pressure, though there are certainly Republicans calling for him to resign, a lot of the pressure is coming from the most progressive members of the state legislature.
Yes, I am aware of that, but I think this is kind of the Republican behind-the-scenes forces using our own internal divisions against us, and I think we have to be very wary of that before we take the bait. There are people who don't want to see themselves be used as pawns to enlarge this beyond its right proportions, but we're losing proportionality, just the way we did with the Al Franken thing, focusing on what is the ideal behavior, what are our internal standards of behavior, instead of what is it in relation to the party competition, are we doing anything remotely as bad as the other side without ever resigning or facing any consequence? Why are we unilaterally disarming in this battle for hearts and minds when it isn't really justified? And I'm not saying this to justify imperfect behavior. I'm saying the remedy is not to take the bait and allow other people to manipulate us into self-destructive acts.
Alan, thank you very much. Sarah in Wyckoff, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I actually, exactly what you just said is the point. You know, how much do we take? My daughter is an adult. She's in her 30s and is very politically active and also runs a youth group. And what happens every day when another politician comes on and another politician is charged with whatever it is, whatever level it is, it almost doesn't matter. The women around us, her generation, my generation, our teenagers say, there's another reason why we don't trust men, because these men of power prove that with power comes some sort of act of aggression or just taking advantage of women. And I think that though I do understand that there are degrees, you know, the Al Franken case or the governor's case, to the younger women who are learning to trust society, it does matter. It matters tremendously that he take responsibility, and that responsibility means that you prove to the women of your constituents, and you prove to all the younger women watching that it's enough. You just can't get away with this.
To the extent that you can say, Sarah, for your daughter working in politics, has she perceived a change since 2017 when the Me Too movement broke out? I think
no. I don't think.
Go ahead. I was just going to say because I think some people are surprised that Cuomo and being, you know, fashioning himself a progressive Democrat and for equal rights would have engaged in even this kind of behavior, even if it was just as he characterizes it, after Me Too.
I think that's exactly the point. I think exactly the point is that even those men who perceive themselves as being better than or somehow understanding of or allies of women, it feels to women that men in power still think that they can just get away with these things because it doesn't matter somehow.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Ellen in Stamford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I think the governor is doing a great job, and every night I was looking forward to during the COVID crisis to come up and calm everybody down. And I really feel bad that so much now, such a force to bring him down for allegations and such a big platform now for, I think, you had a program on Friday and it was dedicated to Cuomo's behavior, and today again. And I'm kind of like a little bit disappointed. We women have a power. Believe me, I have encountered through my life, because I come from Europe, and aggression towards me in the buses and everything. And I had a power. I didn't let anything bother me, and during my career, had, you know, approaching me, and when I did not want it, I just made it clear, and end of the story, I did not ever try to bring anybody down. I understand people make mistakes, but for sending flowers and saying things inappropriately, that doesn't require to bring the governor down or anybody else unless you get pushed to the corner and get raped. Other than that, it's words, and we have to let go.
Do you sense a generational difference, Ellen, to the extent that you may be talking to younger women, between what you and other women in the workforce of your age? I mean, I'm guessing at your age, you know, general range, you tell me. But and younger women, do you feel a generational divide here?
Yeah, I do. I think the younger women are sort of like making a big deal, or what happened to me, blah, blah, blah. Things happen every day, and you have to let go. And if your boss makes inappropriate comments, just brush them away and move on. And you can say, no, I'm not interested. End of the story. But to bring it to the public and try to bring the governor down because he sent dozens of roses, blah, blah, blah. I got dozens of roses from men, and I thank them very much. And that was the end of it.
Ellen, thank you. Thank you very much. One more call. Joe in Hudson, New York. You're on WNYC. Hi, Joe, and we're running out of time, so be brief, but hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, and I will be very fast. We need to hold the standard for Cuomo as what we did to Trump. All this conspiracy issue, your last caller, I don't know what culture he's talking about. She's from Poland. Polish women will never accept such a behavior, because she had an Eastern European accent, and I'm a foreigner myself. We need to hold the standard. And by the way, your reporter is right. Andrew Cuomo is not his father. He's been bullying for past 4 years. Remember the renegade senators that they were voting with Republicans? He didn't do anything. So he's been swinging every bar. He has made so much enemies all over the world. He's buddy that they used to go to Super Bowl party during his father, Carl Palladino from Buffalo. They were buddy together. They used to raise money for his father. He was running against him. And I told one of the New York Times reporter, this is ridiculous. And he went and investigated. He said, you were right. How did you know that, Joe?
So you were, and Joe, I'm going to leave it there for time. I apologize. But you're saying hold Cuomo to a single standard with other politicians. Well, as we can hear from our callers, Josepha, and as we run out of time, it's very easy to find, you know, people on various sides of what they think should happen now and how seriously they think any of these behaviors were, at least as far as acknowledged so far.
Right. And I think the difference is that this is a governor who has made a platform of being a champion for women, who has shepherded pieces of legislation trying to curb sexual harassment in the workplace. And he's at odds right now with some of these policies that he has put forward. So what will happen in the next few weeks, I think, will be indicative of where things are societally and where things go from here. We've heard from two women so far who have worked for him. There may be many more. And I think there comes a point, a tipping point, if that's the case.
And I think one of the things that we hear from callers, we definitely heard it explicitly on Friday, and I think implicitly today, it's that this governor is actually competent in an era of incompetent governance on COVID. Please don't take him away from us. And we'll see if that changes. But despite the failures, the particular failures around the nursing home transfers, there's a wide perception out there, I think, that Cuomo has actually done a good job in an emergency, and please don't take him away from us. I think we heard that explicitly from callers on Friday and implicitly today. You get that sense from the public in your reporting?
Absolutely. I mean, you have Cuomo being graded against Donald Trump, and that you're being graded on a curve at that point because you had ineffective leadership on the federal level. And so the governor was able to step up and be that leader for not just New Yorkers during the peak of the pandemic, but for Americans who have been tuning into his report, his daily conferences. So they're right. I mean, they did see someone who was an effective leader, who was able to speak and really quell some of the worries that people had during a really uncertain and scary time. So that is the Andrew Cuomo that they know. The Andrew Cuomo that some of the New Yorkers know is a different person.
And there is some of the conversation that New Yorkers are having from various points of view with each other today. Josepha Velasquez, reporter for The City. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.